Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other toppings, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Mmm, now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
There are any number of reasons you might consider selling your home. To move closer to family, live within a smaller budget, or just wanting a change of scenery. Whatever your reasons, having to figure out all the various housing market trends in your area may not be what you signed up for. That's where an agent who is a Realtor comes in. Realtors have the expertise to help you find the right price and navigate the process to sell your home in a way that's right for you. That's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Small and Hamaker together in the sand. Max Anstey wins. Puts Webb down. Two wins in a row down the stretch.
What up, guys? Welcome to Title 24 presented by NBC Sports. Pumped for today's pod. A lot to talk about. It was an exciting weekend for sure. I had a couple extra days on the schedule, so that was good. But RV, for your weekend, tell us what you did for the weekend.
Yeah, I got busy Saturday with a pretty intense baseball game coming down to playoffs here soon for the boys, and then we went
and then we went
and raced on Sunday. So we're getting our reps in for baseball and do some racing. So we went out to Glen Helen. The boys got to race.
Where'd you guys? Where was the race at?
Out at Glen Helen, we did a Swap Moto Live race out there. Both boys, and it was good. It was a good program. We were out of there by 3 o'clock, home by like 4:30. So, it was a good Sunday.
Are you going to this weekend to Denver or no?
I'm not going this weekend to Denver. Nope. Looks like we have another game on Saturday, and then we'll be back out at Paula on Sunday for a race. So there.
Do you like Paula or no?
I do. It's not my favorite place to race, but it's somewhat close to the house. I'm not racing it, the boys are, so I don't care. So, as for a national track, it's a decent track, but I still think in Southern California the best track to race at for nationals, Glen Helen, man.
Yeah, are you gonna ride it all this week? What's cracking this week?
No, it's no riding for me. I'm still trying to catch up after the long month that I had. Had beginning of this month, so it's we'll just kind of get back to it and get the boys going and just try to recoup a little bit.
Yeah, you know what's crazy is like I've been like so I'm on the countdown, right? Two more weeks left, and then I'll be obviously gone all next week. Be out your way, so looking forward to that. Looking forward to next week's pod. Obviously, we're gonna line that. We'll work that out this week. I think everyone will be stoked. We're gonna have a little different look since I'll be on location. And out of the office that week. But with two more to go, dude, I'm fried. It's like,
yeah.
I always explain people like, what's the travel like? And like, well, it's not too bad, you know, like first 5 to 8 rounds. And then when the travel for me at least starts to wear down is like week 12, week 13, you're just like, oh, dude, like
I'd do anything for home. Sure. The new and shininess of the series and of the racing and you're excited to go to these events early, you know, in the season, and the travel isn't a problem. But like you said, at race 12, 13, 14, the travel gets a little long on the tooth. That's for sure.
It does. So I can sympathize with you on your long month and March that you had. So that's like where you are at now. That's where I'm at. I'm just like trying to find things to do during the week to like get a release. And I'm like, I don't think I'm going to get a release until the travel's done. So I got one more busy week, which I'm looking forward to. It's going to be a fun time, but I'll be glad to have a little reprieve after that. And you know what's crazy is if you think about it, RV, and like people will probably be like, dude, what do you guys got the life? But if you think about, I thought about this. So since 1997, I've been traveling probably 30 to 35 weekends a year since 1997. So you guys can do the math. I mean, that when you look at it, like 30 weekends a weekend minimum or a year minimum, dude, it's a lot. So, because I was wondering, I'm like, maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm getting soft on the travel, and I'm like, well, wait a minute. I've been at it for almost 30 years. It's a long time,
dude. It is. It's you know, yes, it's fun. It's an amazing lifestyle, but you know, it becomes a lot too. You know, like if you don't fly a lot, I know there's people that fly a lot out there for their job and for their business, and if they're salespeople and they're always traveling around. But no matter what, who you ask, it does get old. You know, going to the, going to the airports every single day, the early mornings, the delays, all the things that come into the travel. You know, that's probably the biggest downfall of being in your position or even an athlete's position is every single weekend is dealing with the commercial travel, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, before we get into to our subject matters and talk about and break down everything that happened on the weekend. So you probably saw it on Instagram and everyone that's watching this podcast and listening. I got an opportunity to go to Dan Patrick, the Dan Patrick Show. He has his own podcast on Peacock, and most people in the sports world know who Dan Patrick is. Just an absolute icon sports broadcaster. He's been everywhere, done everything. And for me, when I think of Dan Patrick, of just, you know, getting up in the mornings when, you know, I was in the grind and racing at the pinnacle, and he was on Sports Center, and, you know, watching him every single morning before I would go out and do my training, all that fun stuff. Well, I got an opportunity now that he's under the NBC regime and broadcast and on Peacock. We lined it up and I went there, and it was so fun. You can actually go to the Title 24 page and check it out, Instagram page and check it out, hit the link and you can watch the episode. But I think the coolest thing, a couple things that I took away from this, RV, is like when you know how it is when you go to see or meet guys like this, you're like, oh man, like they're probably just want to get us in there, get us out. Mm-hmm. He's never really done anything like this before. He's never ridden motorcycles. So anyhow, so first and foremost, my expectations were blown tenfold. The guy was completely and fully engaged the whole time. He was mesmerized, not necessarily by the sport as much as just the motorcycle. He had a ton of questions about the motorcycle because he's, you know, it's not traditional sport and he has never been around motorcycles. So, all of that was great. The whole crew, his supporting crew, they were totally amped on it. And it was just a really cool experience. And again, blew my expectations. But you wouldn't believe how much memorabilia this guy has, dude.
Really?
And oh my gosh. I mean, yeah. I mean, he's been doing it for what, 30, 40 years now. And dude, one of the coolest pieces of memorabilia was, it was in his little like studio. He had this picture framed, and it was him, Belichick, and Brady. And he was giving them the Super Bowl championship trophy, and he had this tie on, right? And he has two of these tie pictures hoisting the trophy to those two guys. And he, on the picture frame, he has that tie that he was wearing in the picture. He retired the tie also. So when I saw that, I'm like, dude, it's so cool. But you think of like someone like that who has been around these gnarly athletes and icons of sports, Tom Brady, Bill Belichick. I mean, you think about that dynasty there. So I was humbled at just how cool he was and how engaged he was. It would have been so easy for him to have just brushed me off, and this was just something that he was doing for the network. That wasn't the case, and it was cool. So, dude, it was awesome.
Yeah, did he swing a leg over the bike?
No, he didn't. His producer Paulie did though, and oh, nice. Paulie hasn't ridden in a while, so he's like, you know, he knows how to ride a motorcycle, but he's never really ridden a dirt bike. He says he hadn't ridden a dirt bike since he was like 8 or 9 years old, and it was on concrete. I'm like, dude, whatever you do, don't touch the front brake.
Yeah.
So, that was a fun experience. It was cool. All right, let's get into it. Hey, before we get into it, let's do our little sponsor read. Thank our great partners, United Motorsports, Quad Lock Case, Dunlop and Boxo. We appreciate you guys. Got some info on United Motorsports that you guys will give you that a little bit later on the giveaway that they're doing, picking out a lucky winner. I'll have details for you in a little bit. But right off the bat, RV, your initial thoughts on Philadelphia.
Dude, I great racing. The track looked tough, but it also looked like it was a really good racetrack. There was that sand section was really, I think, something that in my mind that popped out that I really kind of loved watching. Obviously, we had one that really sticks out is Julik and Hamaker. You know, some of those guys were really starting to triple into the sand, which was really cool to watch. It was so much faster, but just the track in general, it looked like it was technical, but it also looked like you really could push the limit, you know, on the mm-hmm. track. You know, it caught a couple guys out pretty gnarly, Pierce Brown, you know, Hamaker and Julik. You know, and a few others, but overall, I watching it and watching the riders that look like they could push, like qualifier one with Eli just on rails.
Yeah.
You know, if he could have brought that to the main, I think he would have maybe had a chance. Mm-hmm. But didn't bring that to the main event. And but all in all, I thought the track was interesting. It was a lot of fun to watch. It was a good Saturday night for some racing.
Yeah, it was for sure. I think it was a good show. Also, obviously, it's always fun and a great opportunity for the sport and SMX in general, and these athletes to get some time on the big network. So being on NBC at 3, like prime time, it'll be interesting. Hopefully, the numbers are good and. Busting right into it. Well, hold up for the track. What I do want to say is, I liked that longer rhythm lane and how guys were able to go inside, go on, off, or you could go outside, go over the table and then hit the front side of the table and quad, triple, whatever you guys want to call, I thought that was good, but I was a little bummed because I felt like it would have opened up for more passing, but it kind of just equalized, you know. It really wasn't a passing lane, and it didn't work out as a multiple option or a passing lane like I thought I was. I was bummed for that.
Yeah, I thought the track, like watching and you couldn't, like you said, there wasn't like these specific passing mm-hmm. parts or moments on the track. I heard you say it on the broadcast, like when you got, as you're closing that gap, you have to, you know, literally in a snap of a finger, like make a decision, as you're closing rate and pass somebody, like almost catch them off guard. Mm-hmm. You had to really like set them up, but also not give up your information, show them where you're going. You know, you needed to hang back just enough to where they didn't think you're going to go on the inside or on the outside or set them up. But then all of a sudden just surprise them with a pass is what I thought really worked well. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. we got to see a lot of that in the qualifiers with a lot of our heavy hitters, you know, like Jet, for example, going down, Chase going down, you know, same in the lights or in the 250 class, right? Like we had Hayden, we had Tom, we basically our four front runners in the 250 and the two in the 250 and two in the 450. So four total, they all had to come through adversity in those heat races to put themselves into the main event. Yeah. Number one, that's goal number one, but also gate position is so huge.
Oh, dude, totally. And I like what you said about making those passes really quick. Like you had to pounce and two of those areas where I thought like, and it brings me back to that one shot we were talking about last week, where you pass somebody like right off that table mm-hmm. over the single, like go quick, like boom, the door open, you took it quick. Though that right hander after the first corner, and then they did the triple, and then that left hander, like two of those were like where you could sneak in there really quick. I think those were those were the best and easiest places to at least attempt a pass. Other than that, it was a relatively one line track. It's one of those, hey, it's good if you're in the lead, right? Yeah. Because you can just hit it's fun when you're in the lead, when you're not trying to pass, but I like that. I like that, dude.
Totally.
All right. United Motorsports moment of the week. Just an incredible ride. Before we get going, talked about United Motorsports. If you haven't signed up yet, make sure you sign up www.unitedmotorsports.com/title24. That is for the people that are listening. If you're watching this pod, you can see it right there on the screen. Hit the QR code right there. Scan it with your phone, and it'll take you to the sign up page. Remember, on your initial sign up, you get a $15 credit to your sign up. And then we've been talking about it every week. They give a $50 credit to everyone or to one person every single week, but they are having a grand prize, United Motorsports Supercross Championship grand prize. And that grand prize is going to be a, this is pretty cool, a Boxo 3-drawer moto box set.
Oh, nice.
And then they're going to get a set of Dunlop tires. They're going to get a quad lock gift card and a Cardo Pack Talk Edge. That's a little bonus. And autographed jersey by yourself. You probably don't even know this yet, but you're going to sign a jersey for this lucky Perfect. Winner.
I love it.
You're going to get a RC jersey as well. We are going to do that drawing on the 20th of May when we record that day. So we're going to do it on our podcast. So you are only eligible, though, if you sign up. So time is running out. Make sure you go and sign up. So there you got it.
That's a good little package there. Yourself, my jersey, your jersey.
The Boxo, three drawer. It's going to come. I'm assuming it's coming with tools also. So I love it. Yeah, the Moto Box is coming with tools. So talking a few thousand bucks there. So thank you, United Motorsports, for all the support you guys have been on. From the inception of Title 24, Ray Butts and crew over there just doing a phenomenal job. So we appreciate you. Jet Lawrence is the motorsports moment of the week. I got in my notes here, champ, that he is a just an incredible ride in the main event. It was a little rocky for him up until that main event. Clutch start in the main. It was rocky in the heat race, got a horrible start. And I will tell you this, RV too, and I don't know if you had time to watch RDL in practice, but he was like overriding. His intensity was a lot more than what I've seen. He was over jumping. He didn't have the precision. It was like coming out of the corners. He'd lose his rear end. But you know what? When it was time to get the job done and points paying, I mean, he couldn't have done it any better. So, dude,
yeah,
go for it. You
know, RDL, like, I got to see one of his fast laps. I believe it was the very last lap. And, you know, just, it looked like to me like maybe stalled the bike a little bit, fell over in the turn before the finish. But to your point, you know, the track and practice, you can. Practice is a very easy time to override the track. And but to your point, main event, he had to come through some adversity in the qualifiers. He started a little outside. His back was essentially, let's say, I will say, against the wall. We're watching replay right here off the line. And, you know, that not a good start. This looks like to be the heat race. Just clips the front tire on the back wheel there and just goes down. You know, nothing other than just putting himself in a bad position and being, mid pack or closer to the rear of the pack there. And you can see right here, just goes in, nowhere to go, falls over. And, but main event time, you know, like starting a little bit outside, probably not where he wanted to start. It wasn't his first pick outside the box, but he was able to make it all happen right there. Like, dude, he was able to just go right underneath Eli because Eli controlled the turn, but just went a little bit deep. And right here, he snuck on, just barely missed his rear tire.
Dude, how close do you think that was? I didn't realize that.
You could probably barely stick your hand in between that, in between those two tires. So that's how close and critical it was. He knew he needed to make something happen, right? Like, I felt like, and then his whole main event too, like he rode really, really, really well. That's the consistency, that's the maturity that a lot of times you don't see out of a rider of his age. We got one of the best of Jet Lawrence right there in that main event. And I think, you know, as we sit, he's got a 12-point lead. And for me, you know, we have 311 for Jet, Cooper Webb down 12, and then Eli down 41. So as we'll, I'll say it again, the race for the championships only for first and second. So that's Jet and Cooper. You know, he did exactly what he needed to do. And that 12 points right there should bring him to this championship at the end of the season.
Yeah, he's he's living up in the moments, like those tough moments, as you know. Remember, he was tied in points. Well, then he goes and wins last weekend on a gnarly track. And then, you know, then he adds to his points lead again. Coop was off pace. And, dude, it just, you want to talk about, you know, not a kind of a 50-50 rookie, because he had, you know, SMX champ. He got that experience. And then, of course, the outdoors, going 22-0 last year. I mean, I wouldn't call him a complete rookie, but you know, yeah, better than anyone. Supercross is gnarly your first season. I know, like, he did the outdoors. I know he did SMX. Those tracks are more forgiving. And, dude, it's to say, and a
it's different, point, man. It's totally different. Like you said, yes, we do. He did 11 outdoors last year and went 22-0. But I can, I've said this on the show before, your mental state and just the way you approach outdoors, because it's two gate drops, because it's 30 plus two, you're not mentally as stressed when you're racing outdoors for whatever reason. And, you know, the reason is Supercross, there's only one gate drop. There's the track's a lot tighter. You're coming into the first turn with 22 riders, and it's obviously a lot smaller of a track than outdoors. So there's just a lot more that can happen. So as a rider, you're always more stressed. You're always, you know, you're always a little more on edge when it comes to racing and gating up in a Supercross. So for 17 to hold this out for 17 rounds like this, yes, for sure, he's had some ups and downs and some mistakes, but that was a clutch key race right there, because we only have two races left. And with a 12-point lead, that's exactly where I would want to be sitting.
Yeah. Kyle Devin Sizer says, can you get Jed on? I'd like to hear his side of the battle with Coop. Well, Kyle, I mean, yeah, I think we're going to try to get him on. We had him on last year, so yeah. I'm sure he'll come on. We're good. We'll, I mean, you're good buddies with him. I'm good buddies. I don't want to speak for you, RV, but I don't like bugging these guys this time of year. I mean, I got a good relationship. You just as good of a relationship with those guys as you do. And I kind of want to respect their privacy with these last two. And they're not, I don't feel like they're going to tell us anything earth shattering otherwise.
Yeah.
As
a fan, it's nice to get them on, you know, like if you're a fan and you're, you know, like Kyle, they're asking them to get him on. But in this crunch time and in this with two to go, you know, like you said, not trying to add to their workload already. Yes, it's good promotion. It's good for Title 24. It's good for Jet to get on and talk and tell us the ins and the outs. But like you said, probably not going to give us a lot of info right now. He's just totally, totally focused on this coming week and the next coming week. And just try to keep that the same, and the least amount of distractions you can have coming into these last two rounds is what that group, Honda, Dazzy, all those boys are doing. And that's Coop too. You know, that's Coop too. They're trying to, he needs to go back to the drawing board and come out swinging these last two if he wants to give himself a chance.
Hey, Fidelity. What's it cost to invest with the Fidelity app?
Start with as little as $1 with no account fees or trade commissions on U.S. stocks and ETFs.
That's music to my ears.
I can only talk.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Zero account fees apply to retail brokerage accounts only. $0 commission applies to online U.S. equity trades and ETFs and retail Fidelity accounts. Sell order assessment fee not included. Some account types and securities excluded. Details at fidelity.com/commissions. Fidelity Brokerage Services LLC, member NYSE SIPC.
A lot can happen between falling in love with a house online and owning it. Between imagining living there and breathing in your new home for the first time. Having an advocate who can help you navigate the complex world of financing, inspections, negotiating, analyzing the market, and talking through any anxieties that may pop up, that can make all the difference. That's what the expertise of a Realtor can do for you. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors and bound by a code of ethics. Because that's who we are.
Coop fourth. He talked about it, interviewed him after the race, right? Said, what's up? You could tell he was pissed. Totally. Obviously got tight. One thing I want to say about the track, RV, I thought for sure it was going to play out right into to Cooper's Webb's hand. And I thought that because on press day, the corners were super rutty. There were multiple ruts. I'm like, oh, ones where you had to slow up and go low. I'm like, oh, dude, this is going to be awesome for Coop. But the wind kept blowing and it dried out. And you could see there were some corners, some of those 180s, they got super loose.
Yep.
So in my opinion, I feel like, number one, he lost something that could have played into his hand. I think because he got arm pump, you know, and I'm speculating, I don't know this. I'm basing on what I would mean, have gotten.
He used the words tight. So we're going to speculate on, okay, what is that? I'm assuming that's, like you said, that's the first thing that pops into mine and your head is probably arm pump. You know, it's not necessarily a fitness thing. It has to do with your hands, right? Hands and arms. That's most of the time when we get tight, that's where it happens.
Yeah. I think so. Those corners, you know, with him not, with him being loose and sliding the bike and not having to brake and kind of chill and go low and slow, you know, you don't have as, in my opinion, you don't have a chance to rest there, and you have to ride, you have to hold on a bit tighter. You have to be more aggressive with the gas. And it just, you know, when you do that, and I feel like, and I'm going to ask him this, maybe he'll tell me. I'll ask him. I was going to ask him for the show, but like, I'm not going to bother him on a Monday. But I was thinking that I feel like he's been working on his early race intensity, because to try to not let Jet get away. And I feel like he probably just went too hard for too long and could never recover. And part of that was the track and the corners maybe not shaping up to what plays in his hand. What do you think?
I think watching the track, watching it all develop, watching Jet and Anderson and the other guys out there, to your point of what you said about, you know, Coop is very, very strong at finding these tight lines to really cut down, shorten the track. But it went away. He didn't have that option. So I think he kind of was trying to, and I know Coop really uses the front brake a lot, right? So when it is that a little bit marbly and it has that, that fluff, let's call it, on top of the harder base, you really got to be comfortable with having that motorcycle slide around. If you watch, we might have the replay, but of Anderson and Coop, Aaron, if we have that, let's pull that up. But right there, as he went down, I believe it was last lap after the whoops.
Yeah.
You can watch, as soon as Coop lands, he's on the brakes so hard, the front wheel knifes right there. And then it also, because if the front wheel wouldn't have knifed, I think he could have just, him and Jason would have just come together and he would have pushed Jason out, and then Coop would have controlled the inside. But right as he lands, you can see the front wheel knifing. It's the smallest little bit. Well, that was enough to put him on the ground. And I think that he needed to ride this track, this Supercross track, Philly, more of like an outdoor track. And what I mean by that is use more of the cushions, and slide and be comfortable with sliding around that track, because there wasn't a lot of ruts. You know, there was a few, but there was also a lot more cushions out there than there were ruts.
Yeah.
So, and we, like you said, we know Coop likes to cut down, and he's got a lot of front brake pressure. He comes in and uses the front brake a lot. Boy, when it's like that, you almost got to ride it more in layman's terms, almost ride it more like a sand track. Come in, slide it in there, lock the rear brake up, and then immediately get back on the gas and have that rear tire help you turn around. A lot like, I can use myself an example. I think that track would have lended its strengths towards me versus Dunge, for example.
Oh, yeah.
Sliding around, really, you know, like I just feel like that's a little bit of, I think, maybe what he was missing, and then maybe what played a part in him getting tight, you know, just the track. He was just struggling with the track a little bit to run that pace. And this is all speculation, but this is just what I saw when I watched.
Yeah. Mason Schatz, I like this question from Mason. Do you think Webb has the mental strength to recover, or do you think that Jet locks it up? I mean, RV, I don't think there's no mental, mental strength or recovery that's going to help.
Here's the deal. Like that, it's a tough spot to be in because yes, is he mentally strong? Is he one of the most mentally strong riders out there? Yes, he is. But he's in a position now with being that he's 12 points down. Even if he wins out, and Jet is second both times, or a second and a third, it's still going to put him with the SMX championship, right? Like he's going to still win this thing. So he at this point, if you're in Coop's shoes. I think winning out would be a nice little stamp to have, but you're going to have to either rely on a mistake from Jet or, make something happen. Ride aggressively and somehow if they were to come together, let's say, then he has potentially a shot, but at the speeds that the top three or four are going, especially Jet, what we just saw on Saturday night. He was able to come through the pack, heat race for an example. He came all the way up through the pack, up to sixth, I believe, from dead last in the turn in the first turn. So that being said, it's going to take a major upset to see the gap of this 12 points work into Cooper's favor.
So that kind of leads me in like to Fowler's facts questions. Like, what tactics do you deploy to make up the points deficit? Would you do anything to try to make that up other than just trying to do a good race and make sure you start in the right spot, you don't fall, blah, blah, blah?
I think if you want to talk tactics and if you want to say like, how can I position myself to potentially cause him to make a mistake? I think one of the easiest places to do that is line up right next to him on the gate and potentially, or more than likely on the inside. And if you can get the jump on him, shut him out right out of the gate. So put him as soon as the gate drops. If you have a wheel on him, start to come over on him, and not like to take him out, but basically to shut his hole off, and then he has to drop behind, Coop and the guy next to him, and then all of a sudden he might be coming around the first turn, 10th, 11th, 12th, 14th, and then at that point, he has to come through the pack. Maybe he rides, maybe he pushes it a little too hard, he finds himself washing out and things like that. But it's very hard to, in my opinion, especially to think about how can I make something happen, pull something out of thin air. It's very hard, but I think that's your easiest spot to get in somebody's head, and I think your easiest spot to shut them out right away is right on the line.
Yeah. Hey, I think that Tomac overall, I would say I go back to that the Triple Crown in St. Louis, remember? I believe it was the second race where he was all over Jet. I feel like since that race, he's been consistently better, has had a bit more speed, looks a little more comfortable. His starts have been a lot better. And not getting the results probably that he wants. Like, I think he should have been on the box, all things considered, this week. But I do think that Eli is getting better. And I'm just going to say this, and I'm done talking about him for the rest of the year, because I said, yeah, he's getting better for sure. I feel like, assuming he stays healthy through the MX season, has a good SMX playoff round and does well there. I like to see him with a good off season, a normal off season, not injured. It's going to be interesting. So I'm kind of giving him an out there.
Yep.
And I definitely think he's gotten better throughout the season. He's more consistent. He's running up front more. His starts are better, blah, blah, blah. So I think he's better. Do you think that because you saw him when he let Coop high, you think that put him off rhythm? I feel like he, RV, I feel like he was in just in a tough spot. So we're watching him when he kind of checks up. Coop had the inside. He's not going to try to defend that position. It's his teammate. And this is a respect move, I feel like, right? Eli knows what's at stake. I feel like if the roles were reversed, shoes were on the other foot, Coop would have been done the exact same thing. That is just a respect from a champion's mindset. You let those guys go for it. But I feel like he was in an awkward spot. And it's like, I could probably go faster, but do I not go faster? But then he's slowing down, and then you got Sexton pushing on him, but then you got Anderson pushing on him. He was just, I think that screwed his race, in my opinion.
Yeah, it was interesting. See, he had a pretty big lull right there. You know, he got kind of pounced on by three riders or so, like pretty quick. Mm-hmm. You know, did he get tight? We're all speculating here. I don't know the answer for sure, but yeah, the back to the Coop and Eli there, Coop had the inside, even though Eli had a wheel on him. Regardless, if they were racing true super hard, Coop was coming up the inside there. He was going to run up high. That was his best option, is to just drop and follow suit and then try to latch on. But he didn't have the chance or the speed to latch on to those two. Because right there, obviously, at that time, he's like, okay, you got Jet leading, you got Coop in second. Here's my chance to just to follow, learn, and see where these guys are going fast. But it just seemed like the rest of the pack kind of clicked him off, you know.
So you think he wasn't like, you didn't feel like he was in a spot to where he's like, I probably shouldn't pass him back?
I don't think he could have passed him back.
Really?
I from what I saw and watched and you know, because he immediately fairly quickly got passed by Jason and then Chase, you know, like, I don't feel like he had the speed. Like I said, he had the speed in the qualifier. The main event, he didn't, to me, he didn't look and didn't ride like he rode in the qualifier. You know, those guys were able to pick him off fairly easy. Big mistake right there. Chase was able to go by, you know, like that was a big mistake right there, and a mistake, in my opinion, that shouldn't have happened. So either wasn't feeling it. And then there goes Jason right up the inside of the sand. Wasn't even expecting it. So I feel like there was something off, you know, like he just wasn't feeling it, or like you said, didn't want to run that pace. Or was he tight? I like I said, it's all speculation. I don't know for sure. But
I don't know. I'm a little bit in disagreement with you. I feel like, I just feel like, dude, he was in a screwed spot. Now, looking back, you know, at it and watching these replays, definitely he wasn't flowing.
But no.
Was he ever going to try to, like, let's just say he runs.
I don't think he had it. I don't think he had the speed in the main event to rebound from that and put a charge and put a pass on back on Coop.
Okay, but does he put a pass back on Coop?
I think if he had it, he does.
Really?
If he had it, he does. Ooh. I mean, I don't think that, you know, look, I'm not inside of Star Racing Yamaha. And I don't know, you know, what Bobby's saying and things like that. But knowing Eli as a champion, knowing Eli as a racer, you know, the doesn't matter what
he passes him back.
If he was faster, he passes him back. Wow. I don't see Eli laying down just because of the point situation.
Dang. All right.
I think he's too good of a racer to do that. He's, you know, like all these dudes want to win, right? You know, I think that
that's fair.
And you know, like you're not letting Ezra by, bro. Like, come on. I know. Points or no points, you're going for it.
I hear you. Anderson, dude, he was good all day. He was good in qualifying practice. I feel you mentioned it a little bit about like track style.
Yeah.
You know, how he's a little bit loose on the bike. I think he did great, dude.
Yep, he did. Got a heat race. Good heat race win for him, I believe, right?
Hey, I had a question like I wanted to ask you. Is there like does Coop and Anderson, do they get along? Is there beef? Like, do you think, like, I think that was probably cool. Coop's.
I think they're cool. But I do think that if somebody were to just kind of flip a little, you know, do a little thing here or there, run somebody high because of knowing a little bit of their mannerisms, and especially Jason, and also Coop, you know, if Jason were to run Coop a little bit high, like expecting, you're gonna expect it back, right? Like, so I think those two could have definitely got into it. But like I said, when we watched that replay, it wasn't Anderson's fault by no means. If you watch, as soon as Coop lands in the whoops, the front wheel knifes, and then he has to get off the brakes, it also turns him to the, you know, right there, boom. That all happened. That was a result of the front wheel knifing. But I will say, I wanted to bring this up. Coop has to get better in the whoops. He's got to stop. He needs to have the blitz and blitz the whoops fast. He needs that in his back pocket. If he's more comfortable with jumping the whoops a lot of times, that's great. In my opinion, those were not jumpable jumping whoops. And why I say that is because of the double single, or if you went outside, you tripled into the whoops, the amount of speed that you generate off of that triple is so huge coming into that whoop section. You can eat guys up. You know, when you have to go triple, there's only so fast you can come into a set of whoops like that, because you have to land in each one of those pockets. And now blitzing them, you can come in as fast as you want. So I think that is an area where Coop really needs to work on, is if they're jumpers, great. You know, and a lot of times there is jumpers, and then you'll see the whole pack jumping. But right. Majority of guys the top guys were all blitzing those set of whoops except for him. And I
when it's 50-50 like that, when it's not defiably better by jumping, you think he needs to get better.
And I do. I do. We've talked about him being really good in ruddy conditions and a little more technical and where you want to jump. And he's really good in those scenarios. But I think right there in whoops that are kind of on the edge of like, hey, maybe we should jump them, maybe we shouldn't. And then all of a sudden you go out and watch, all these dudes are blitzing them and making major time up on him. And just like that, Anderson was able to go.
Look at that. Look how much time he made up, dude. Exactly. Like what you're saying. He was what? 3 bike lengths behind him.
Maybe more.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, look at this.
Outside, Coop goes inside, roll, double. Anderson triples on the gas and then and makes up the difference. So he makes the gap up and gets up next to him. So I would say a total of, you know, you're looking at 6-8 bike lengths that he was able to make up by going outside triple and committing to blitzing the whoops. And that's where I think he needs to be better for, especially for next year.
Yeah, but it's tough, dude. I don't know how much room, well, there's a lot of room for improvement there, but I don't know how much he will physically be able to do it. I mean, I feel like it's been this way forever, and you know, I don't know. It'd be interesting. He's going to your point, when it's 50-50 like that, or it's not for sure just as fast a jump. I agree with you. He's going to have to commit and get better.
And I don't know what that is. I don't know if that's bike setup, you know, like if he needs to work on his motorcycle and get it a little more set up for blitzing the whoops, or if it's just like a mental, not block, but a mental thing that he just kind of always reverts to jumping. Nonetheless, that's where he definitely needs to be better is in the whoops.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other toppings, and managing it as one big juicy investment. Now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
A lot can happen between falling in love with a house online and owning it. Between imagining living there and breathing in your new home for the first time. Having an advocate who can help you navigate the complex world of financing, inspections, negotiating, analyzing the market, and talking through any anxieties that may pop up, that can make all the difference. That's what the expertise of a Realtor can do for you. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors and bound by a code of ethics. Because that's who we are.
Dunlop due diligence section. If you haven't, go check out Dunlop and best tire in the paddock on the track for sure. You love a Dunlop yourself, RV. Right. Those guys work their tails off. Everyone over there been there for a long time. You name them, they know what they're doing. And this goes out. Massive shout out to Chase Sexton, but he had a lot going on internally over there at that Red Bull KTM squad. Did you hear about how the mechanic and him, his original mechanic, parted ways? That's a mechanic that left Honda to go over and work with Chase. Now it's Kyle DeFoe that has stepped in as his interim mechanic. I don't know how long he's going to be the mechanic, maybe the rest of the year. However, pretty good rebound ride from Nashville. And you think about the chaos and speculation of what happened to the bike, what didn't happen to the bike. Give me your thoughts on Chase.
Yeah, I thought Chase rode good. He was quick. He was definitely quick on the track. He made quick moves.
There's blitzing. Look, yep. Coop got passed by Gibbs.
Yeah, right there. Just by blitzing the whoops there on Coop. Ooh, got a little spice there.
Tell me. I wanted to know your thought, Aaron. Replay that real quick, please. Did he, Stu and I were going back and forth on this little thing after the finish line with Sexton and Coop. Did Chase do that on purpose or what? Give me your take on it.
Let's see here. Just watching the replay. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I would say he did it on purpose now because you can see right as he lands, I feel like he definitely goes over to the left a little bit. Maybe he was like, hey, am I going to go to the inside or no, I'm going to run him out and push him high. And then Coop was just already on his trajectory of coming kind of going to maybe go to middle of the turn or try to cut down underneath of him. But for sure, Chase was, I'm not saying he meant to hit him or hit him that hard, but he definitely wanted to make a statement of like, hey, I'm taking this line. I'm in control of this line in this turn here. So they end up coming together there. It looked like they hit pretty hard.
Yeah, dude, they did. And I think it was like tire to tire too, Coop, they were picking on Coop. They were picking on Coop. But dude, I feel like he was a sitting duck for those guys, right? Have you ever been in a spot like that, RV, where you like you're running up front and then you get tight and you can't hold on and you just got dudes coming up and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't escape. Have you ever been in that spot?
I can't remember for sure if I've for sure been in a position where with maybe James or Dunge where, you know, like you start to ride a little bit tight, but as for losing multiple positions, I don't know if I've been in that position, but definitely losing touch or losing the lead and then losing touch with somebody, you know, and dropping a position. But yeah, it's tough when you get tight, man. Like it's, and dude, they rode that track had a high intensity, high pace, and you know, well over 20 laps too. So, you know, it'd be interesting to get to really do some deep dive and some research on what exactly was tight. What was it that Coop was dealing with?
Yeah. Hey, one quick shout out, and then we'll move it on to the 250s. Cause dude, our Boxo breakdown section is going to be so good. I can't wait to get your hints. I haven't even asked you cause I want you to give it to us here. So, but Hunter was good all day. Like I keep going back to his 450 debut season is very similar to how his 250 debut season was. If you go look back, slow start, you could see that he had something there. For sure. I think he's going to continue to get better. He won qualifying practice. Andrew 559 says, what does Hunter sniff before that start of the heat race? Do you guys see like how they have like something that they put on their nostrils, like smelling something? Do you know what that is?
I think like a pick me up, a wake me up, like a good smack in the face, like smelling salt.
That's what I'm asking you. I don't know.
And it's like a smelling salt of some sort, I don't know, fighters do it and it kind of just wakes you up, you know, gives you that kick in the pants that you kind of need. It'd be interesting to see I believe Doc G has something you what rub underneath your nose, just like that. And that's very well could it be. I know Doc G works with them. I think it's just to in heighten the senses,
right,
before that main event, before that gate drop. So that's what I say it is. I'm not saying that changes the results in it anyway. It could be, like I said, a good kick in the pants. But it obviously worked well. But to your point of yes, has he had like a slower start? And he's definitely had a way slower start to his 250 career along with his 450 career than his brother. Mm-hmm. But what I like to see is how they are attacking or how they are approaching Hunter's how they approach his 250 and his 450. He's calculated right here. He's making the pass.
Oh my
dude, misses.
Dude, he was out of control.
Gets on the back, starts grabbing a handful of throttle, and not necessarily the guy you want to have that mistake happen to, because as of Justin right here, foot comes right there, foot comes off, slips off. He's able to hang on to it and run him wide. And dude, it was a close one. I would have worried me so much because of who it happened to, right? Yeah. Because Justin didn't know that it was a mistake and that it was on accident. He's just thinking, this guy ran it up on me. I'm coming into the next turn, right?
I thought the exact same thing you were saying in the when I watched it on the broadcast. I'm like, oh no, this isn't gonna go too. Hey, but how about this feeling that Hunter probably had? It's like, so he's coming through here and he's probably going like right now. He's like, oh this ain't good. I can't. That was a good save, actually.
Totally. You know, he was able to, because dude, that 450, when you lose that's a thing for the fans that are watching. When you lose when you lose your feet in the whoops, the worst thing that can happen too is once your foot comes off and you lose that, then you have no way to keep your butt from hitting the seat. And then a lot of times you'll get the bike will, on the rebound side of it, the bike will hit you in the butt, and then you potentially or most of the time lose both feet. And then you're only subject to riding, sitting down in the whoops with a 450 underneath of you, staying on the gas because you can't let off the gas. So it was a very, very good save. I bet you they definitely talked about that at the truck afterwards.
I'm trying not to laugh, but I just picture myself when you've been in that spot. I've been in that spot. To explain to our viewers and listeners, like from a percentage standpoint of how far, like, of out of control he was of his motorcycle and how much control was he right there? Would you say he's 80% out of control, 90%?
Yeah, I would say it's 80, 80, 85, 90. Yeah. It was touch and go there for a second.
Like,
yeah, the worst part about it is, which I was just watching again. The one thing, and I don't know for sure, but it doesn't look like he got his chin bar on his helmet. If that would have touched the bars hard enough to like move the goggles up, and then the goggles, your bottom of your foam that's actually underneath your goggles will come up and get in right in between your eyes. Then you lose your vision. You're obviously your eyelashes are kind of in your eyes now. Like there's a lot that can happen. It looked like the helmet didn't touch the crossbar, which luckily, but when that typically happens, when you lose a footing like that, then you're subject to coming down. You come down closer to the bars and your face will hit the bars, or your helmet will hit the bars. Then your goggles, then you lose your vision. So it was a good save. It definitely was a good save.
Yep. It was, let's go to 250s, dude. And Max Anstey, how about that dub? I mean, that guy was on, bro. He was riding well all day long. Boom, goes right up the side, tries to make a pass on Seth Hamaker, but then he goes through the cross down move, squares up the corner, exits early, positions himself perfectly to get up that inside. And dude, he looked like he was in his own league to me.
It's a bummer to look back now, obviously, with his engine failure. It's the what ifs. Where would he be? He was a red plate holder
early in
the season, and major malfunction out of everybody's control, and now knocks down a win here at Philly. You know, just rode a phenomenal race. Like I've said this before, maybe in season one, it's really cool to be able to see somebody that has taken the path, not the traditional path of racing, you know, came over here to the States as a young kid, tried to make it here, really couldn't cut it, went back to Europe for a few years, 3 or 4 years, you know, rode really well over there, matured. And now we see him back in the States on a privateer team, on that Firepower Honda team. And dude, they're putting in really, really good performances for the budget, for the size of the team, where they're at, you know, just their situation. So really, you know, those are really cool stories, you know, for somebody that didn't deal with those struggles throughout my career, to be able to see those struggles. And then also at 30 years old, I think 30, 31 years old, and to be in mm-hmm. his position it's really cool. It really, like, honestly, it's really cool to see.
Yeah, it is. And how hard it is to do what he's done. You think about, like, basically recreated his career. Zach Osborne did, in my opinion,
very similar thing. Yep. Yeah, very similar thing.
It's just a feel-good story, too, like elaborating on what you said. I love, like, he's always fun to listen to when he gets up on the podium. And I think he's going to be here for a while. And so our man Steve Mathis was talking about it. Sounds like maybe Anstey's headed to Star next year.
That's what I heard. Yeah, I heard he'll be moving from obviously a privateer team to a factory team. What I hope in that happening, obviously he whatever struggles or whatever he's up against and face in the team faces right now won't have those same struggles, but he also will be dealing with a whole different set of pressure too. You're riding for a factory team. You know, they want you in the championship hunt. They want race wins, and they don't want one. Yep. They want as many as they can get. So you have to, it's a whole different dynamic. And I hope that what we see of Max right now is what we see, when he moves over to Star, if that is confirmed, or when that is confirmed, which I believe that's what's happening. That he does the same thing and has the same mentality as where he's at right now is when he's at Star. Because I think if he can ride the way he's riding now, and he's got the mental side of his game where it is right now, mm-hmm. And if he brings that over to Star, I think he could be a real contender for this title next year. Because, like I said, all the things that they might struggle with and he might mm-hmm. struggle with, you know, essentially won't be there.
Yeah. Hey, before we go to the Boxo breakdown, I want to skip ahead on our run RV with you, on this 250 class. Cause I want your insight. We got some questions to answer, but, Vial versus Deegan, 15 points difference, dude. Both Vial and Deegs did well this weekend, and yep. coming back, you can see the points right there. Deegs is 15 points back. Pierce Brown is mathematically eliminated for that title. Let's answer a question. M. Miller 141. What would be your mindset going into the final showdown if you were Deegan Vial? You want to take Deeg, or you want me to take Deeg? You pick. You take one, I'll take one.
Yeah, I'll take Deegs because it's the first one on the list there.
Okay. What's your mindset if you're him, dude?
Well, you have to, number one, you have to win. What I saw this weekend was a great performance out of both. I'm very impressed with obviously, you know, Tom being fighting off. I mean, they basically rode that main event coming through the pack together. And there was a lot of times where Deegan was very close. And also Tom would put a lap or a rider in between them. I think it happened 3 or 4 times. And Deegan was able to rebound and make that pass and then close the gap up again. So I'm not saying he was quicker. I think that as Tom was facing riders in front of him, Deegan would pass the rider in between him and Tom, and then he would close that gap before Tom would get past the rider in front of him. But he's got to win out. 15 points is quite a spread. And essentially he's got to hope for or something non-traditional, a crash, a big mistake from Tom to get back in this fight. I'm not saying he's out of it, but 15 points is a lot of points to make up if both of these riders continue riding well. I don't see it happening unless there's something catastrophic that happens to Tom.
Got it. If I'm Tom Viao, I love these questions, by the way. I don't know if you do, RV, but I like these, like, what would we do? What would you do? What would be your mindset? More than I like the questions of what my opinion is on a certain matter. But if I'm Viao, I am going to go to Salt Lake. I'm going to know exactly, number one, where I need to finish if Deegs is winning. And I'm gonna have a breakdown and a full rundown of where I need to be given certain circumstances. Yep. Then from that point, it's business as usual. I'm not gonna take any unnecessary risks. If someone is doing a gnarly rhythm lane, I'm not gonna do it if I know I can't do it every lap of the main event. And I'm gonna make sure I'm 100% comfortable. Then from that, I'm gonna take it, like lap by lap. I'm gonna go for the whole shot. I'm going to try to win my heat race. And if Deegs is around me there, I'm going to give him plenty of room. I'm going to have to play a little defense. I'm not going to put myself in a position where he can get at me because Deegs is probably going to have to do something in order, for him to have a legit shot to win. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to be super mindful of my surroundings. That's going to be my game plan. Then in the main event, I'm going to go there. Same thing. I'm going to go. If the win is there, I'm taking it. If Deegan is anywhere around me, I might let the guy go in front of me at that point because all I have to do is just be right there behind him, and I'm the champ. And I'm going to be extremely mindful of my surroundings. I'm not going to get up. I'm going to do my best to not get caught up in anyone else's battles. I'm going to be mindful of the other teammates that on Deegs. Teammates also. So that's kind of my check down list. And that would be my game plan. I do want to say this is like, I feel like the media and a lot of us build this narrative of, what's Deegan going to do? Is he going to take cheap shots? And I feel like he played it perfectly this weekend. He didn't do what I think a lot of people were expecting him to do or had some assumption that he was going to do something. And he was extremely gracious on the podium.
Although, I didn't go out there and win. It sucks, obviously, but it was a good race coming from the back and a good speed out of me and Tom. We had fun out there. I gave him a wheel every here and there, but he's a tough opponent and I have respect for him. And
his respect level that he has for Tom, I think that from a fan's perspective, I think I'm not saying that he did this on purpose, like as far as like his performance on the track, but saying what he said, that was cool to listen to what he had to say and the respect he showed for Tom on the podium, I think.
Yeah, Tom did exactly what what you said about what stood out, what you just said there for me was being aware of his surroundings. Well, what we just saw was exactly what you just mentioned, what he has to do in these last two. He just did that this weekend too. He was super aware of his surroundings. He said on the podium that all his goal was is to keep Deegs at bay, keep him behind him. And as they came through the pack, because there was some spots there, there wasn't, like you said, I think people were maybe expecting something to come from Hayden, very aggressively, but they're really, to me, really wasn't the door wasn't open for that. But he was. But as I would rather, but to be in Tom's spot and to be have the heat that Hayden was giving him for 15 minutes is gnarly to sustain that, and not make one little mistake to open that door up to get Hayden close enough to run him out somewhere, run him wide, or come in and block past him. He rode a phenomenal race.
He did. He did. I think I read something a couple weeks ago, RV, about I think it was on X, but it's to let's see here, Dia Critics question: will we be seeing more European riders in the 250 Supercross class? And it got me thinking because of Vial and his influence and how well he's doing, I can't help but not think that other riders in the MXGP series, this kind of gets their mind wondering. And what I read a couple of weeks ago is that there could be a problem with the lineup in MXGPs a couple of years down the road if riders are wanting to continue to come over here. And then, you know, I think it could be a problem.
Riders, yeah, they'll be at a real top. You know, the gate won't be full. Look, I think there's, you know, that is. I heard that. I did hear that.
Did you hear that? Like, yeah. Even Prado. I mean, Prado's an example. You know.
Yep, he's coming. And I do think that the big kicker part is if the unknown is how well they can ride Supercross, right? Like, obviously, we already know that outdoors is not a problem, and they're going to do really well outdoors. But if they can ride Supercross, but we do set the standard of the high. I don't want to say the highest level, but for Supercross, we are. I mean, it is the highest level of racing.
It's the pinnacle. 120%
Yep, of dirt bike racing, and you know, we're all doing this for the love of the sport, but also it's our job. So if they can make a bigger chunk of money over here too, and get to come over and live in the U.S., I think it's a great experience. And they get to get on the Supercross platform, you know. And I know as well as you do, MotoGP, MXGP. Everybody watches Supercross because it's a spectacle. So they all want to be here at some point. It's just if they can cut it in the Supercross department.
Yeah, that's always the big question mark. Can they cut it in the Supercross department? So I do. I think it's going to start a trend. It's going to be tough for MXGP side of things, in my opinion. But I think that won't.
But to flip that script.
Yeah.
I also think there's some Ty Masterpool, great example. And there's some more out there. We know you're not great at Supercross. Yes, can you ride it? Yes. I mean, pull up here. I think he did decent. It might be one of his better finishes, at least in the qualifier. I think he ended up maybe sixth in the qualifier. But a perfect example. Like, if Supercross is one of your struggles and outdoors is something that you enjoy and do better at, why not try over there? Your life experience is going to be probably second to none. You get to go travel the world if you like that stuff. And you can go over there and potentially make a name for yourself over there in the outdoor world and sustain your career and make more money. Instead of trying to put a privateer team together or, you know, get these rides here and there and kind of be intermittently with a ride, one season you have a ride, one season you don't. If you can get established over in Europe, I think it's another great platform over there to go and race.
You think T Gritty RC, you think Deegan is best off to throw in the towel for a Supercross championship and focus on outdoors now? So if you're coaching Deegan, are you taking T Gritty's RC's advice and working on outdoor from this point on? Or are you going to still?
Well, I think T Gritty, they're already working on outdoors. The beauty of the 250 classes is they've had this big break kind of middle of the season of their eight races. So their outdoor testing has already been going on. Their riding of outdoors is already happening. And then they will jump back into Supercross for like these last couple rounds. But as for getting a good base set up for outdoors, I think they already have that. They have data from last year too. But no matter what, I think, like, just because if you were to take Hayden and pull him out of Supercross, and obviously he's got to go and race, but so he's got to stay on the Supercross track at least one day a week, and you put him on outdoors, I don't think it changes his results for outdoors. I think he's racing and riding and training at those race paces and doing what you need to do, Supercross or motocross. It all benefits you in the big scale of things.
It does.
Hey, Fidelity. What's it cost to invest with the Fidelity app?
Start with as little as $1 with no account fees or trade commissions on U.S. stocks and ETFs.
Hmm, that's music to my ears.
I can only talk.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Zero account fees apply to retail brokerage accounts only. $0 commission applies to online U.S. equity trades and ETFs and retail Fidelity accounts. Sell order assessment fee not included. Some account types and securities excluded. Details at fidelity.com/commissions. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
It's one thing falling in love with a house, picturing yourself moving in and calling it home, and quite another navigating the world of price negotiating, mortgage lenders, and finding the budget that works best for you. An agent who's a realtor can make understanding that world easier. Realtors have the expertise, access to proprietary data, and tools to help you get from imagining living somewhere to actually doing it. That's the kind of help we can provide. Because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
I'm so stoked for this. So check this out, our little Boxo breakdown. Of course, if you guys listen to Title 24 every week, you know what this topic's going to be about. It's going to be about Swole and Hammacher and the collision. But I brought this. I've been meaning to show you guys, but I throw this in for our adventure ride. It's a cool little, check it out, like ratchet set.
Oh yeah,
it's pretty sweet. I throw it in one of my bags and then outside of the tool bag that I got, and small little nifty little ratchet set. I do one cool thing that Boxo has. Probably people, if you haven't seen on their site, it's cool. Small little thing, you can bring it wherever you want, and just a handy little cool little ratchet set I got. But the Boxo breakdowns with Jalik Swole, Seth Hammacher. Great job, Seth. That was a home race for you. Cool thing. His grandfather was there, I believe, and Will was sharing the story. His grandfather was 91 years old, had never been to a Supercross race, and I tell you, that's pretty cool. So probably a little extra motivation. It's a contract year for Hammacher as well, but I thought he's good. I don't think he's 100%. I think he's banged up from maybe Nashville. I think he took a digger. Or the week before, I can't exactly remember, but I definitely know he's not 100%. Did good, but dude, give it to us 120%. Who's at fault? Who isn't at fault right here with the collision?
Ah, man. I mean, Seth wrote an amazing qualifier, but we're watching the replay right now of Seth.
What would you do right here?
Well, I mean, Jalik pulled out that triple, and you can see how much quicker that triple was. And if Aaron, that slow-mo replay we had, if we can replay that again, I thought I just saw Hammacher look up and look over to the right at the last second. If we'll replay that one more time. I mean, let's see. So what I see is Jalik going for it right here. Seth looks like he looks over and maybe he thinks Jalik's going to stay inside. I think Seth should have been more of aware of his surroundings because of right when he lands, you can see they have right here. That's still a big gap. Yes, things are happening fast. We're watching it on video and you're like, there's no way he could have stopped. I can guarantee you that Seth, maybe he didn't see it, but other riders would have saw that, being more aware of your surroundings. But what might have caught Seth off guard is because that triple was so much faster. Look at how much ground Jalik closed in the middle of the
closing
air.
Rate.
The closing rate. Maybe Seth just had, he's like, there's no way he's that close. You know, he never thought he was that close. And he wasn't until he landed that triple. Yes, was it a very aggressive move? I think it was an aggressive move. But I also think it was kind of a racing move. Right here, he should have seen him out of the corner of his eye. He was almost in front of him already.
You're not putting any blame on Jalik about maybe Jalik should have anticipated Hammacher? Like, do you think Jalik thought that he was going to stop?
I don't know what Jalik thought. I think this is what I think Jalik thought. I think Jalik thought he was going to triple into that turn. Seth was going to see him out of the corner of his eye. He was going to maybe check up just enough to where he's going to not hit him. And then Jalik goes into second. Yes, when you add it all into real speed, true time speed there, it looks like it was Jalik's fault. But look at the closing rate right here. Right here is when Seth should have noticed him. Right there is where he should have noticed him. Yeah. But he kept going. And I would, you know, what in that scenario, if he would have noticed, if he would have been aware, if he would have saw him check up a quick second and then change your trajectory and let Julie go. And now Hamaker come up the inside of the next sand section because he went outside. Yeah. That outside was very slow. A lot of guys got past, especially once that triple started to develop to be much, much faster. We look, that's where Anderson passed on Eli, I believe. It was half a second right there. I bet 0.3 to half a second that if you were to do fast lap, that was a big, so right there, he could have, if he would have noticed it, he could have then changed where he was going right there and come up the inside, hit the brakes for a quick second, and then came up the inside of the next, on the exit of that turn right there is when he should have noticed it right there. He's already in front of him. So that's my take. He was already in front of him. He should have been aware of, and if he wasn't aware, just have more, better
awareness of your surroundings. I'm going to Monday morning quarterback it, and I'm going to eat some crow. I called it straight. I said it was Jalik's fault. Cause that's the way it appeared to me, in the moment. I haven't had time to break it down like you just did. Great edit work.
Was a technically Jalik's fault. The crash happened because of Jalik. But as you break it down, like I just broke it down, we're seeing these different things. The front angle is a little different than the back, but I like the back angle the best. I feel like he should have noticed Jalik, right?
Right.
He's already in front of him right there, and he kept going. I feel like he had time to get on the brakes and then come up the inside.
That supports it right there. So Jalik, I know I put the blame on you during the broadcast. I'm sorry, but that great camera work, Aaron. Great clip, or Hector, whichever one it was. Hey, fabulous Ricky, job.
Ricky, you can't be, like when you call it on the broadcast, you call it on the broadcast. You don't have time to dissect it. You're just calling and you're telling the fans what we're seeing and
what I saw. Yeah, but exactly. I like how you broke down that.
Here, I mean, we've watched this replay already, folks, already like 10 times already, right? So, we're able to really dissect it and watch it over and over and see, and then also get both of our opinions. So as you, I don't think what you said. I would have probably said the same thing on the fly, but now we've got to the bottom of it.
There you go. Good stuff. Good breakdown. I like that. Yeah, that split decision right there, where Seth saw him at his peripheral. He should have been like, hit the brakes real quick, or at least stood the bike up, or tried to. Yeah, he had lost position at that point because he was behind. And I agree with you. That was way to break it down. Hey, for a promo. Boxo is doing a promo. You get 10% off. Title 20. You just type in the code Title 24. Boom, 10% discount. Go check it out. Aaron, roll the Super Motocross on NBC promo this week so all of our viewers and listeners can check it out. Here you go. Here's the lineup. As always, Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern, SMX Insider with Weej and JT. They're special guests, I think, this week. They're going to try to get Travis Pastrana on there for their big interview. Saturday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern, Race Day Live qualifying from Denver. It's going to be exciting. That track is going to be good. And then 7 p.m. Eastern is when the race starts. That'll be live on Peacock. Make sure you check it out. Sunday, if you're not doing anything, an encore presentation of Denver Supercross is at 4 p.m. Eastern. Again, Sunday, encore presentation. Always love being on the big NBC. And Sunday, that's a fabulous time slot. So if you're tied up on Saturday, you'll have a chance to watch it again on NBC. So make sure you guys tune in. That's the fun stuff happening. Going to be good. I love going to Denver, the Mile High Stadium. What is that? I think it's Empower Field, I believe. You know what? A lot of stuff looking to next week before we get to the quad lock question of the week, and then we'll be done, is a lot of stuff happened in Denver last week or last year.
Yep.
And dude, as crazy as this series has been, I ain't ruling anything out, bro. Nothing.
No, you can't. You can't. We'll rattle them off right now. It's another open stadium. It's at altitude, like 5,500 or so. I don't know it's very high. Bikes don't run like they should. Bodies don't run like they should. Also, from just watching dirt conditions from last year, yes, it looked good, but main event time, you know, that the dirt can potentially, the track can potentially break down, get slippery, get hard. So it might lend a little more precise, that European kind of riding style, you know, smooth, you know, so that, you know, that could lend some favors to guys like that. Right. So not favors, but work into their favor if they show up on Saturday also. So yeah.
I for sure know that this track in Denver this weekend, like what you're saying, that dirt is hard. It's not forgiving. It's going to be very similar, in my opinion, to how Nashville was. So like you're saying, RV, precision is going to be key. It's going to be one of those tracks. It's going to be really hard to ask a lot out of your motorcycle to like go get that extra little tenth because the dirt is so hard. Guys are going to be working harder because it's in elevation. Yep. So horsepower is going to be a premium, especially in the 250s.
And then Ricky, we go to Salt Lake the next weekend. That is at altitude in very similar conditions. I have rode that dirt. And that dirt is very, like you said, it's kind of like more like a, Nashville. It gets chunked out. It gets hard. It gets dry. It's got some rocks, you know, like pebbles in it that potentially, that make it hard to find traction. But I think the biggest element in all of this is the altitude. You know, if you're not used to it, which none of us are, except for, I guess, Eli, right? He lives at that altitude most of the time. You know, going to next weekend in Denver is his home race. So I'm sure the Eli fans will be out in droves there, hopefully just filling that stadium. And it'll be a cool, obviously they didn't get to see him ride last year there. You know, they popped that as Achilles pretty early and night was over. So he's back for redemption. So it'd be really cool for Eli to get that win in his hometown. That stadium will go nuts, I bet.
Oh, dude. That place is super loud. That's going to be exciting. Quad lock question of the week. I like it just because, again, I like when we're able to share our stories. I think our viewers and listeners like it. Before I announce who the winner is, I got some more product I want to show you guys. If you work a desk job and you're in the office, check out this dual desktop wireless charger. Pretty sweet. You can place your phone on the bottom there, lay it flat down, it'll charge. Or if you have a quad lock case, you can put it up top here where that little adapter is, and it can charge via that way as well. So pretty sweet little thing that Quadlock makes. If you haven't checked out their products, that's one of the cool things that they make.
It looks like our producer Aaron is using it right now, he said. And then your earbuds can go on the bottom. So if you have the phone case, your phone can be attached to the clip, the charging, and then the earbuds on the bottom is what our co-producer Jay.
There you go. Curly said. That's what Curly said. Yeah,
Curly. Yeah. Should we call him Baldy?
Huh?
Shouldn't we call him Baldy?
No, it's like, yeah, we should. I call him a lot of things.
Okay,
idiots, most of the time what I call him.
You got to have thick skin if you're hanging around us, guys.
That's right. Oh, my gosh. All these dudes that come at us like, they don't come after you very often. But, dude, like for me, it's like, I bet if we hung out, they'd have a different opinion of me, like probably 100%. Have a good time. But, all right, 100%. Dude, the winner of the quad lock question is from R. Vollmer 992. What was your best comeback ride with major championship implications? I'll let you go first.
All right. So just off the top of my head, what pops into my head, knocking in Redbud, got a good start, but then after coming down out of, you know, Redbud, you go long start. It was the old start. So you went left, right. There was a mechanics area down. You had that big step up. But when we landed on the step up down at the bottom, I was too far left. We had some rain early on Friday and stuff. So it was pretty muddy. And as soon as I landed, the whole bike came out from underneath of me. I cartwheeled, ripped the exhaust off. I had to get back up, obviously dead last, and salvage, you know, I think eighth or so on in that moto. But right there, you know, like it's, there, I mean, and there's more. I think what I think to just give a little more insight on that question is there's lots of these rides for everybody that are in a championship position that you have to push through the mental side. If you didn't show up 100%, if you didn't show up and you're not 100%, and then something else happens that weekend, it's how do you dig yourself out of that hole? And also the never say die, never say quit type mentality. Obviously, all things within reason. Obviously, if you got a bone sticking out of your arm, or you know something actually broke where it's hindering you from even riding the motorcycle, it's pretty much you're pretty much out at that point. But I will say that when you're in those positions, it's get up, it's push to the end, because every single point matters.
There you go. I had two. So the first one would have been in 2002, my first year at Honda, when I had that gnarly crash at the season opener at Anaheim. I went over the handlebars on that. It was like a step up. I spun on the face of the table, on the face of the landing. And when I spun, like I just over rotated, yeah, it was a gnarly crash.
Wasn't that when LaRocco ran over your feet going into the whoops?
Yep.
Yeah, dude, that was so gnarly.
So that was the opening round, and then I was behind from that point, right? So took me a couple weeks to get going because I was banged up. Then I started winning some races, and Vilman was my rival that year, and he was riding really well. And it's like I would win, he would get second, or if he won, I would get second. But nevertheless, so I spotted him probably 25, 30 points right there at the beginning of the first three rounds. Well, then leading up to Daytona, I got super lucky as far as how we got tied back up in points. Unfortunately for him, he was doing a photo shoot or something and hurt himself. And I can't remember if he didn't race or whatever, but nevertheless, we got tied back in points. And so that one was a great, I would call it a comeback ride again, although I got lucky. Because of DV's misfortune, it tied us up. But I still had to basically, you know, do really well the latter half of the season. Kind of to your point, never give up. In a must situation, I couldn't cough the ball back up anymore. You know, I had to actually perform, because if I didn't, DV was gonna beat me. He was gonna win. So that was the first comeback. And then I don't know that I would call it a second. Like this was necessarily a comeback race, but 2006 championship when I had the DNF at St. Louis, I lost 25 points, 22 points that night, and had to play catch up. I did gain a few points back on Reedy that I had coughed up because of that that mechanical failure. My spring broke. Remember how you talked about your titanium spring broke? Same thing happened. That's what happened to mine that night. So that broke. And yeah, I had to stay in it. I think we had maybe six races left, and I knew that I had to perform to get back those points on Stu and Chad. I was able to do that. I don't know that I won any races after that, but like if Chad won one weekend, I got second, Stu would get fourth, or vice versa. So I was just kind of the most consistent guy. And that was another one of my championship comeback stories, or just, you know, staying resilient and never giving up and just not choking, really, just executing. Yeah,
I think it's like, you know, like to your point of like not choking or not, it's dealing with those adversities currently, like at the current moment, and making the best of the situation. But I think what also is even deeper is what happens on Sunday and Monday in your weeks. How does those mistakes or those problems affect your midweek, and then affect your mentality going into the next weekend? I felt like where I was very, very strong is if I had a bad weekend, yes, I'd come back to the truck and be super pissed and be super bummed and not happy with either the performance or whatever the case may be. But really Monday turnaround, like, I was very good at letting that stuff roll off my back, not letting it affect the current week ahead of you and the current weekend. Guys that you know, dwell on bad situations, and not make excuses, but, you know, talk about this went wrong. I don't know why this had, you know, this and bring up all of that stuff happened and it happened and it's behind you now. So how can you not think about it, or how can you just brush that off? Yes, that happened on Saturday. Well, now it's Monday and we have another race this coming Saturday. And it's a love hate relationship. Is you're only as good as your last race. So you every Saturday night you have another chance at standing up on top of that box. And I think if you can, these riders that deal with that and that are good at letting that stuff roll off their back and not letting it affect their midweek and weekend, the next weekend, those are the guys that are very strong in 17 rounds and a whole motocross, supercross season and motocross season.
Yeah, I think for yourself, I mean, you were gifted with that for sure. Probably some of it is taught from your parents as well. Go out there, do the best that you can. And, you know, like my dad always used to tell me, it's funny, you know, you think about it, it's like, you know, you think long and you think wrong. And I feel like sometimes it's like you think long, you think wrong, but dude, it's true. Just go out there and race. And I feel like that's where Jed is really good. I feel like that's where Coop is really good. Again, likes of yourself, myself, like, honestly, it was pretty simple. Go out there, race your damn motorcycle, do what you know how to do, and don't make any mistakes. You can't control what other riders are going to do, but you can control your destiny. So you go out there and do what you're freaking supposed to do, and you're going to have a really good shot at not only winning races, but winning championships. And just don't think about it. And like your point, go back Monday, wipe off what happened. Where'd you screw up this weekend? This is where I sucked. This is where I need to be better. All right, we're done worrying about it. Let's go out there and make it happen.
Yep.
It really is that simple, people. But good stuff. All right, RV, that's the end of it, my man. What do you got? What you got cracking for today? I'm about to go for a bike ride here.
Yeah. Let's see here.
You go for a bike ride, dude?
Soon, Ricky. Soon. Once I get the garage done, I gotta. It's. I'm this close. I keep talking about it. I'm getting stucco put on garage doors this end of this week and things like that. Boxo cabinets. I got. Wait till you guys see the shop. I'll get some photos taken of it when it's done.
So it's not going to be done when we come back, when we're there on Sunday and Monday?
The Boxo stuff should be in when you get out here, yeah. So it's taking a little bit, but it's going to be super cool. I'm stoked. I'll get some photos for Aaron to put up on the deal, and we'll do a little Boxo run with that. But yeah, just laying low. I already did the bike prep for got home yesterday, washed the bikes, put them back in the van, and we're ready for this next weekend when we go racing.
You think you're ever going to do Loretta's?
Dude, no. I don't. I mean, as of right now, I have no desire to go out there and race, especially if both of my kids are racing. Like yesterday, running from we each kid did two classes, so it was very busy. So there's zero chance. I can add myself into that mix, not till I were to ever get a mechanic, but I think I have no desire to go back there.
It cuts into our beverage time too.
It definitely does that. And I want to go experience Loretta's if this is in the future. Don't know if it is, but if it is, I want to go and give the kids the experience of Loretta Lynn's. And not have to convolute my racing with their racing. I've done it. It's their time if they want to do it. So,
yeah. All right. Thanks everyone for listening every week, whether you listen or you watch it on Peacock. Remember, we're always on Peacock on demand. So check that out. If you don't have the Peacock app, do it. There's all kinds of stuff besides Title 24. We're on Motorsports on NBC's YouTube page. You can watch us there if you've never watched us also. And then remember, we're on all of your favorite podcast applications. Give us a download. We'd appreciate it. Hopefully you're enjoying it. Keep sending your questions in. Thank you, United Motorsports, Boxo USA, Quad Lock Case, Dunlop Tires. You guys are great. Again, thanks to all the fans. RV, great job again. And we'll see you Monday. Have a good week, my friend.
All right, buddy. You too.
Hey, Fidelity. How can I remember to invest every month?
With the Fidelity app, you can choose a schedule and set up recurring investments in stocks and ETFs.
Oh, that sounds easier than I thought.
You got this.
Yeah, I do. Now, where did I put my keys?
You will find them where you left them.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Is this house a good price compared to others in the area? Are prices going up or down? If I don't make an offer right this very moment, will I miss my chance? These are just some of the questions a home buyer might ask. And these are the sorts of questions an agent who is a Realtor can help answer. Because Realtors have the expertise, data, and access to specialty training to help you navigate the process of buying a home. They provide support, guidance, and have your back every step of the way. That's what Realtors do, because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.